The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hello, Thunderbolt fans, and not. This week, the Thunderbolt goes to the dogs, and to the chickens, and to the cows, and even to the rats. Yes, kids, for this week's show, I have combed through my archives, and I have collected a collection of collectible and memorable stories of various native and various not-so-native fauna. This week, the Thunderbolt goes wild. Or in the case of dogs and chickens, the Thunderbolt goes semi-domesticated. But whatever, however, you need to prepare yourselves, because it is the time of the beasts. Holy cow! Now, I personally differentiate between animal species that are the result of natural selection and human-created subspecies that natural selection had little, if anything, to do with. And yes, to stay true to my stated role of telling uncomfortable truths, I definitely include dogs and cats in this category of human-created subspecies. So guess what the single biggest cause of global warming, water depletion, deforestation, species extinction, and ocean dead zones is? If you answered humans, you are only slightly right. It's overpopulation. Yes. But the problem species is cows. Now, there are around 1.5 billion cows on our planet. That only works out to around one cow for every five humans. But cows eat 150 pounds of food a day, while humans eat a wimpy 2 or 3 pounds per day, and cows drink 35 gallons of water per day. And while I couldn't find out how much water an average human consumes, I know it is far less than 35 gallons per day. Now, cows are responsible for 51% of the greenhouse emissions excreted by life. Grazing cows are devastating the landscape all over the western states, and the excretion from factory farms are a major cause of dead zones in the ocean. Cattle ranchers are always at the forefront of movements to eliminate predators such as wolves and bears. The commercial cattle industry, in fact, is utterly devastating to our environment, our health, and to our long-term economic well-being. And environmental organizations are falling down badly on this issue, and possibly connected to that fact, but indicative of many other things regardless. Anti-cattle industry activists are often classified as terrorists, and special shield laws are being passed in many states in order to legally cover up criminality. If that isn't an oxymoron. And now, Thunderbolt fans, I have a Thunderbolt exclusive! I was just innocently sitting in my truck on the street in front of the Westside Food Co-op the other day when suddenly and unexpectedly I found myself the recipient of journalistic manna from heaven. I saw a chicken crossing the road. Yes, your intrepid reporter saw opportunity and leaped. I immediately launched an investigation into that age-old question, why did the chicken cross the road? Well, kids, here's the result of my in-depth eyewitness accounting. Evidently, there is something that lives in grass that is under a fir tree that chickens like to eat. Evidently, whatever that thing is does not live in grass that is not under a fir tree. My evidence is that after crossing the road, the chicken immediately made his way to the fir tree and then slowly worked his way around the tree, busily munching on stuff that was in the grass. Then, after completing a circle around the tree, the chicken wandered off down the dead-end street and disappeared. So there you have it. The next time someone asks you why did the chicken cross the road, you now have the documentary evidence to answer their question. So when I recently pointed out to a Facebook liberal that Switzerland is both fully armed and nearly crime-free, his only comeback was that they registered their guns in Switzerland and that the government had not yet seized anyone's arms. And thus, the fact that registering guns will cause the government to seize your arms is a right-wing myth. Now, my comeback was that the Swiss government wouldn't dare. So that is not an issue. At about this same time, a Facebook friend of mine posted a picture of Ted Nugent standing proudly over a bear that he had just shot and killed. So concerning bears, I have gotten to know several bears on a personal level over the years. I've even met several of their families. And I consider bears to be people too. I often engage with the bears in a contest wherein they tried to steal my food and I tried to prevent them from stealing my food. And more often than not, I lost this contest.
Yogi Bear is smarter than the average bear. Yogi Bear is always in the ranger's head. At a picnic table, you will find him there. Stop him down more goodies than the average bear. Oh, he will sleep till noon, but before it's dark, he'll have every picnic basket that's in Jellystone Park.
Yeah, Yogi Bear is better
than a millionaire.
That's because he's smarter than the average bear. Yo.
Yes, over the years, I have spent several hundred dollars on bear food. The village of Jasper, Alberta, came up with new bear-proof trash cans that were so complicated that many people couldn't figure them out.
But before it's dark, he'll have every picnic basket that's a Jellystone Park.
Yeah, Yogi Bear is better than a millionaire. That's because he's smarter than the average bear.
The bears have the new trash cans down within a week. Well, I believe in the right to bear arms.
The average bear.
I also believe in the right,
the average bear,
to arm bears. Especially if Ted Nugent happens to be around. Has Mr. Nugent done anything new lately? Now, concerning bears, bears are very smart. Bears think. Bears scheme. You can see it in their eyes. Now, black bears virtually never attack humans. Now, grizzly bears are more territorial, and they are more likely to attack people. But even grizzly bear attacks are highly unlikely. A friend of mine did set up a teepee in northern Alberta once, and a grizzly bear tore his teepee down while he was inside of it. Then the bear looked my friend right in the eye, literally shook his head up and down a couple of times, and then walked away. His message was very clear. Now, that is not even the trippiest bear story I could tell you, even from my direct personal experience, but it is the shortest. Now, I have never had direct contact with polar bears, but they are said to be very large, and it is said that they will often hunt you down and eat you. Now, if your karma declares that being attacked by a bear is a necessary life experience for you, then rule number one is do not run from a bear. Rule number two is do not run from a bear. Now, as with any predator, including dogs, running from them is inviting them to chase you. This is like basic hardcore wired instinctual predator behavior. By running from a bear, you are now speaking to the bear in his native tongue, and what you are saying to him is that you are prey. Now, bears can run 40 miles per hour. You are never going to outrun a bear. Now, I've heard more than one person say that you can outrun a bear going downhill. Well, I'm afraid this is a flawed theory, and I don't think that you would want to test a flawed theory in such a situation. Well, a bear indeed does have a much more difficult time running downhill due to his short forelegs. The bear can still run a lot faster than you can. Now, bears usually weigh several hundred pounds, and they are solid muscle, and they are armed with multi-inch fangs, and they have four paws full of multi-inch razor-sharp claws that they wield with great strength, with great speed, and with great alacrity. I've heard that playing dead works sometimes, but sometimes not. According to the Inuit and other far northern native tribes that have been regularly dealing with the aforementioned very large man-eating bears for many eons now, the best way to deal with an attacking bear is to sacrifice your left arm to the bear's mouth and keep his fangs busy on that, whilst you employ your right arm, plunging your knife repeatedly into the bear's carotid artery. Now, this method fails to account for whatever the bear is doing with its forepaws full of multi-inch razor-sharp claws at the time, but I guess you're dealing with one thing at a time in such a situation. Now, every bear has a unique personality, and every bear is different from every other bear. Some of the bears, I knew I could kick them in the ass as they ran off with my peanut butter, and some of the bears I knew just to give them their space. Now, in all of my bear contacts, I was only slightly sketched one time. I was hiking in the mountains of British Columbia when I walked right by a bear that had been sitting in a little clearing right off the trail. Neither of us had seen the other until suddenly I was walking by him less than 10 feet away. Now, I just kept on walking until I heard the sound of a running bear behind me. Now, that got my attention. I turned around and froze. The bear was just emerging from the little clearing onto the trail, but he also froze when he saw me looking at him. And something I hadn't noticed during my brief initial glimpse was that this was a frigging grizzly bear. He just sat and stared at me with curiosity, perhaps wondering how I tasted. But I knew the drill. If you are confronted with an aggressive-seeming bear, do not make eye contact, do not make sudden moves, and do not turn your back. You raise your arms into the air to make yourself look bigger. Talk to him in a soothing voice as you slowly back away. Now, my position was further complicated by the fact that I had 20 pounds of marijuana in my backpack, since the purpose of my hike was to smuggle this marijuana into the United States. And so, dropping my pack, which is another suggested tactic if confronting an aggressive bear, was something I really did not want to do. But it turned out to be unnecessary. The bear just sat and watched me back away without coming any closer. Now, this is said by many reliable sources to be the best strategy when confronting almost any aggressive predator, and it worked for me the one time that I needed it with a bear, and it worked for me the several times I have needed it with aggressive dogs. So this is the strategy that the Thunderbolt suggests if you are ever attacked by a predator. Though I do not know if this method works with Wall Street predators.
Yogi Bear is smarter than the average bear. Yogi Bear is always in the ranger's hair. At a picnic table you will find him there, stuffing down more goodies than the average bear. He will sleep till noon, but before it's dark, you'll have every picnic basket that's in Jelly's front yard. Yogi has it better than a billionaire. That's because he's smarter than the average bear.
How's the bear today?
We are Palestinians. We deserve to have a home. We deserve to have our land. We deserve to have our freedom. And we deserve to have cows.
Yes, kids. Back in 1987, the Israeli government revealed that in their never-ending quest to steal their homeland back from the people who originally stole it from them, those dastardly Palestinians were concocting yet another threat to Israeli security by enlisting an unlikely but potentially deadly ally. For in a shocking move, the Palestinians deployed Trojan cows. Oh, the horror.
Fat and docile, big and dumb. They look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be et at the hamburger fry. cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew. No one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cow doll drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, cause the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die.
Cows with guns. Yes, this great cowspiracy was eventually revealed as a subversive Palestinian plot to produce milk in competition with the Israeli-supplied milk. This practice vastly increased the danger that the Palestinians would become self-sufficient rather than being utterly dependent upon their deadliest enemy for their very survival.
They crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darkening in the day. 12 burning McDonald's, have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with gun.
Upon learning of the Palestinian cows, Israeli soldiers moved in, took pictures of each individual cow, and then informed the villagers that these cows are dangerous for the security of Israel. Palestinians were given 24 hours to shut down their dairy, or the Israelis threatened to bulldoze it.
The president said, enough is enough, these uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned.
So the Palestinians hid their cows at the home of the local butcher. The Israelis eventually dispatched several hundred soldiers and 2 helicopters in their desperate quest to quell this dangerous new threat to Israeli security. However, shortly after this, the Oslo Accords were signed and the demand for Palestinian dairy cows subsided, and the Belt Shahur dairy farm became economically unviable.
The order was given to turn cows to whoppers
enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers.
We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or dog.
Oh, oh.
But this story does end with a mysterious twist. For you see, the last cow in the Beit Sahur herd was sold to a butcher, but it managed to escape on its way to its final destination, never to be seen again. But according to legend, this rogue cow can sometimes be seen atop hilltops in the dead of the night. And it is said that this cow just sits motionless, eyeing Israeli settler villages with dire foreboding.
Oh, oh.
Cows with guns.
The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of any of the stations that air the Thunderbolt, nor anybody that has anything to do with any of those stations. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. Yes, we've got a hell of a show for you this week. But first, I need to issue an official Thunderbolt apology. Last year, I was innocently hanging out in my truck in front of the West Side Food Co-op when I stumbled over what I considered at the time to be journalistic manna from heaven. Yes, I spotted a chicken crossing the road. I immediately launched into a full and in-depth investigation to determine once and for all the age-old question. Why did the chicken cross the road? Now, while I did indeed discover the chicken's rather innocuous secret, upon publishing the information, I immediately received harsh criticisms from listeners for doing this. In fact, one listener responded thusly: I long to live in a world where a chicken can cross a road without having its motives questioned. And after deep self-reflection on my part, I realized that this criticism was fully merited. Yes, I found myself wondering how I would react were some giant omnipotent being to suddenly begin intensely scrutinizing a very personal act in my very personal life in order to splash my activities all over the World Wide Web. I also found myself wondering what the chicken would have felt about me hovering around watching its every move had it known that I had eaten a chicken breast from the deli at Fred Meyer just the day before. Therefore, I officially apologize to the species
G. gallus of the genus Gallus of the subfamily Phasianae of the family Phasianidae of the order Galliformes of the class Aves of the phylum Chordata of the kingdom Animalia. May you cross many roads before that great final crossing into chicken heaven. Or a bucket at Colonel Sanders, as the case may be. This is the legend of Erraticus. I recently poked gentle fun at people who suffer ophidiophobia, or a fear of snakes. I did this as I forced them to consider the reality of a snake that can glide through the air as it hunts its prey. Now, this was not gratuitous. I have found that once people learn more about a species, then they tend to think more highly of them. And as far as flying snakes goes, who was the first snake to even come up with that idea? And how many tries did it take before the first snake worked it out? Now that takes determination. Well, the Thunderbolt is once again going to mine the treasures of Mother Nature this week. For over the last couple of months, I have received some serious schooling from a rat. Now, I moved into a little 100-square-foot plastic house inside my daughter's garage just before Christmas. For the first month, I thought that I was sharing the garage with both a mouse and a mole. The mole theory came about when a friend said that she had seen a mole coming out of a hole right next to the garage. And the only glimpse that I had ever had of my roommate was a very brief glimpse of its ass as it disappeared into a crack. Now, I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was a lot bigger than a mouse. And also, since it once carried away an entire loaf of bread, then I knew no mouse could do that. And so, it took me almost a month to figure out that I was, instead, living with a rather large rat. Now, the fact that it took me a month of living in very close quarters with him before even figuring out what he was is itself a clue as to what I was dealing with here. Now, I lived in a school bus for 28 years, and mice used to set up housekeeping in my school bus with fair regularity. But all I needed to do was to set out a 5-gallon bucket with some peanut butter in the bottom at night. The mice would go into the bucket for the peanut butter, and then they were unable to get back out. I'd get up in the morning and take them wherever I thought they might be able to get by, and I would dump them out. And I wouldn't even mind living with mice if they would just stop crapping all over my dishes and my food. However, I have never before lived with a rat. Therefore, I have no gauge with which to measure the level of intelligence that the rat species possesses as a whole. But as for this particular rat, if he is any indication of typical rat intelligence, then I am surprised they haven't taken over the world. I began serious attempts at eviction when he started chewing on my Bose speaker wires, and thus began an epic battle of wits with the creature that has now lasted for nearly 2 months. And I must now admit that this battle has turned out to be like Wile E. Coyote trying to catch the Roadrunner. Not only that, but I must now admit defeat. The rat has won. Not only that, but he has also won my admiration and respect. And I now officially surrender. I'm going to start feeding him just to try to keep him out of my other stuff. So here's a brief synopsis of the critical events in this epic tale. The peanut butter in the bucket trick did not work. Upon awakening, I found the bucket free of both peanut butter and rodents. Next, I tied a piece of cheese to a stick that was itself rather precariously holding up a box that would fall if the stick was disturbed in any manner. The next morning, everything was just as I left it, including the rope leading to the little slip knot that had been tied to the cheese, except the cheese was gone. Now, still thinking I was dealing with a mouse, I went to the hardware store and I bought a small plastic tray filled with a sticky substance. You place the bait in the middle of the tray and, in theory, the mouse gets stuck. Now, while this trick did not work either, it did provide me with my first opportunity to actually see my foe in the fur. For upon hearing a commotion and investigating the matter, rather than espying a cute little mouse stuck in a plastic tray, I saw instead a rather large rat walking around, barely inconvenienced by the little plastic tray that was stuck to his foot. As soon as I appeared, the rat ran into a crack. Now, the plastic tray would not fit into the crack, and he briefly got stuck, and I moved in to grab him. But the edges of the crack provided the leverage that the rat needed to pull his foot out of the tray, whereupon he disappeared with great alacrity into the wild unknown mazes contained within the mountain of boxes that reside inside of my daughter's garage. So I went back to the hardware store and I learned that there was also a rat version of the same idea with a much larger tray and much more glue. The next morning, I found the tray lying next to the nearest crack, and the only thing left in the tray was the rat's little paw prints. So next, I tried a combination hat trick. I set the sticky tray under a box that was precariously balancing on a stick. Now, since I knew that the rat needed leverage to get the tray off, then I figured there was no way he could get that big plastic tray out from under the box without hitting the stick and thus knocking the box down. But alas, the next morning, my box was still propped up, but the tray was lying empty next to the nearest crack. I measured the clearances, and there was barely room to slide the tray from under the box without hitting the stick. It was almost as if the rat understood what the stick was for. That was it. I was out of ideas. The only choice I saw now was to deploy lethal means. I really didn't want to, and I felt really bad about it, but chewing my speaker wires is completely unacceptable behavior in a roommate, and I wasn't going to sacrifice a $250 speaker system purchased back in the days when I had disposable income, which days seem unlikely ever to return. I wasn't going to sacrifice that for a frigging rat, no matter how smart he was. Go! So I went to the hardware store, and I purchased the extra jumbo rat-sized snap trap with the deadly spring-loaded bar that usually catches them right across the neck, killing them instantly. The next day, I set the trap. About an hour later, I heard a snap. I went out into the garage and saw the trap with a seemingly dead rat attached. But then, to my great consternation, the rat wiggled around for a couple of seconds and went still again. Ooh-yah! Ooh-yah! Crap. Yeah, I moved in and saw that Raticus. Yes, Sherry named him when she heard the story. Had almost gotten away with it again. In fact, I discovered that Raticus had lost, literally, by a nose. In fact, I am afraid that Raticus has lost his nose. He wiggled again when he saw me, but he went still as I slid a piece of cardboard under him. Keeping one hand on the trap to make absolutely sure that he couldn't get away, I took him two blocks away to the back of a very large schoolyard with several houses and garages nearby. When I released him from the trap, he just lay there. I left. It was raining. I felt really bad. I wondered about the survival odds for a rat without a nose. So I went back 10 minutes later to check on him, and he was gone. I felt lost. There was an empty space in the garage now. I began recalling now fond memories of Radicus's genius at making me look like an idiot.
All along the icy waste that a face is smiling in the gloom.
But then the rat came back.
Roll up, roll down, feeling unwound, step into the viewing room.
I saw the telltale curtain wiggle that happens whenever he uses one of his pathways behind my desk.
Cameras were all around, we've got you taped, you're in the play. Here's your ID, ideal for identifying, one and all.
The peanut butter I set out was gone within minutes.
Invest your life in the memory bank, ours the interest, and we thank you.
Wow. He crossed two streets and ran a gauntlet of cats to get back here.
The ice cream lady went to draw us to see you in the passion play.
I am done. I bow in true respect before my better, and I offer to him my sword in unconditional surrender. Yes, kids, me and Radicus are now buds. I'm moving out of here at the end of the month anyway, so Radicus is welcome to it. Radicus is much quieter and much less active now. He has been through a traumatic experience, and he is seriously injured. He is probably crippled for life. His sacrifice, though, has taught me some important things about the sanctity of life, and I hope he is now teaching some of you some important things about similar things. I don't think there are very many rats who have ever accomplished that feat. At least then, Radicus did not lose his nose completely in vain, says I in a transparent attempt at assuaging guilt. Radicus just had some organic peanut butter for breakfast. I honestly wish him the best. Sorry about the nose, dude. Just please quit chewing on my speaker wires. Americans of a certain age probably remember the American fascination with Indian snake charmers back in the 60s and the 70s. It was viewed as yet another bizarre custom engaged in by ignorant foreigners, and American cartoons of the era would often depict snake charmers in a variety of condescending and racist manners. But snake charming is an actual thing that
that people in India actually did. And I am thinking that they probably still do, though I haven't heard of the practice for a long time now. But you see, here is the thing about snake charmers. A cobra will not strike unless and until it has a specific target and knows right where it is going. Even though it appears as if the cobra and the snake charmer are dancing with each other, what is actually happening is that the cobra is seeking a secure target at which to strike. And the snake charmer is not giving him one. Or at least any snake charmers that manage to survive their apprenticeships do not give them one. For I am thinking that is not a trade that one can learn by trial and error. Anyway, I thought I would mention this fact since snake charmers taunting cobras, yet giving them nowhere to strike, I believe, provides yet more rich metaphorical fodder for possible future activist strategies. Yes, kids, saving the world may be a fun job, but somebody's gotta do it. It is time to get to work now. So that is it for the news and commentary section this week. Olympia listeners are going to go to the local activist events calendar, and for Seattle listeners, we have music. And we are going to start off with a tune from Jerry Halliwell, better known as Ginger Spice.
That was Bag It Up from Jerry Halliwell. And that is it for the Thunderbolt this week, kids. But don't lose all hope. I'll be back next week. Hope to see you then. Have a good one. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And a quick note here. The Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes. Or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net. Where you can also find the show notes, as well as a year's worth of downloadable episodes of the Thunderbolt.
Thank you very much.